Welcome to the mikvah.org podcast. The mikvah organization has been dedicated to the education and resources for Jewish family life since 1975-5735. You can support our vital work at mikvah.org/donate. Thank you for your support and enjoy today's recording.
Welcome to the first episode of our new series on the topic of Shalom Bias. To begin the series, we hear from Pamela Klein, LCSW, as she delves into the essential role that vulnerability plays in fostering healthy marriages.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another mikvah.org podcast. My name is Chassi Rifkin, and I'm your host for today. Today, we are privileged to have in conversation with Pamela Klein on vulnerability. Pamela Klein is a licensed clinical social worker and an ASEC-certified therapist specializing in intimacy. She specializes in helping individuals and couples with all kinds of relationship problems. Couples come to see her at various stages of the relationship. And Pamela has spoken to us many times before. I encourage you to listen to previous episodes at mikvah.org/audio for podcast form or mikvah.org/media if you'd like to see the videos. Pamela has received a certification at the NYU Program for Human Sexuality, and she's also been trained in mindfulness, somatic intervention, and emotionally focused therapy. She has a private practice in Five Towns and now works remotely with clients all over New York. She can be reached at PamelaKleinLCSW@gmail.com. We'll also put that contact in the show notes. So let's get right into today's conversation. And Pamela, I'm so happy to, you know, be back speaking with you again.
Thank you for
having
me.
Why did we decide to do a workshop, our podcast, on vulnerability? But that opening point, like, why did we choose this topic? Let's go right into it.
Sure. Okay. So I have noticed, like, in my work and with couples and individuals, you know, most people coming to me often who are struggling either with their relationships in general or with intimacy. And specifically, I've seen where a lot of people are struggling with this. They may not know they're struggling with this, and that's some of the point of today is to bring some awareness to that. But I find often when couples are struggling with desire discrepancies or low desire, or they're, you know, struggling in the bedroom in some sort of way, or they're struggling in their relationship in some sort of way, very, very, very often I can say that there's someone in the relationship, or even maybe both of them, where they're having a hard time with vulnerability. And I think that that's like a very big buzzword. So we're sort of to try to break it down into what that really means and how people can work on this and understanding more about it, because I think it's something that could benefit a lot of people, both in their general relationships and particularly in their physical relationships.
So you mentioned that vulnerability is a buzzword. So let's say, what does vulnerability mean? How do you define it?
Sure. So many of us have probably heard that word before, but I don't think most people really understand, again, what that means, or the importance of it, or how to, you know, work on it. So, you know, when I was sort of searching for a good definition, there was a couple of things that came up. So I sort of just want to read them so people have a sense of what we're talking about. And obviously we'll go into much more depth about it. So being vulnerable means we make a conscious decision not to hide ourselves, or vulnerability as being described by Brené Brown, who's a very big researcher on vulnerability, says it's uncertainty, it's risk, it's emotional exposure. You know, some people say vulnerability is like an emotional openness and putting yourself into a position where you're exposed and you're willing to be open, like letting your guard down to connect in a more raw and open manner. And it's just expressing sides of yourself that you have like the least confidence about or the least certainty about, and allowing others to come in and respond to them. So it's definitely risky, right? Because what we're doing basically is that we're going to open ourselves up in some sort of, again, vulnerable way. And we don't know how others will respond to us, right? So I think what most people are afraid of is that if you really, you know, truly saw who I was or parts of me that I've been hiding from you, you may not like it, or you may judge me, or you may reject me, and that will obviously hurt a person. So we tend to shy away from this. And I find that, you know, it's sort of like if you think about, you know, young children or babies, right? Like, they're always vulnerable, right? This is easy for them. This is effortless for them, right? When they feel sad, they're going to cry. When they feel happy, they're going to smile. When they feel pain, they're going to flinch, right? Like, they're not hiding themselves in any sort of which way. And they're seeking our comfort and our soothing and our being there for them, right? They haven't yet learned to like hide themselves or feel ashamed of themselves in some way. But as we go on in life and we get more sophisticated and more developed, and we experience, you know, loss or trauma or disappointment or just regular life, you know, sort of stuff, and life is not always so, you know, neat and clean, it tends to be messy, right? We kind of develop our sense of ourselves as like, okay, we have to hide certain parts of ourselves and we can't just let it all out there. So what ends up happening is that we actually do the opposite sometimes of what we feel. We might feel really sad, but we laugh, right? We might feel really scared, but we sort of act like, okay, we're fine, we're okay, right? We might be jealous of someone, but say we're really happy for them. We just sort of hide all these negative parts of ourselves. And that's where, you know, you'll ask someone, how are you doing? They just say, good, Baruch Hashem, right? Like, everything's fine, right? I'm not expecting everyone to be vulnerable to everyone on the street, but at the end of the day, we don't let too many people into, you know, the parts of us that we're not sure of how people are going to respond to. So that is really what this is about. It's learning about.
But wouldn't that be like a good thing? I mean, that would probably say that's healthy, right? We shouldn't be vulnerable with everybody. When everyone says, how are you doing? They're not expecting you to go into a sob story.
Right, right. So I say, so if everything is in balance, right? Because yes, obviously we don't want people to be going around and, you know, saying, oh my gosh, we can't imagine, right? The day, the week, the head, all the time. But I think the problem is we go to the opposite extreme, right? That like we heard the anyone in, and obviously we're talking specifically here about learning to do this in marriage and relationships that are most meaningful to us. And okay.
So
while
we're encouraging the vulnerability and the exposure within our close relationships, which means thinking about, is this where I should be vulnerable?
Right.
Probably not.
Right. And in the places where it'd be appropriate to be able to recognize, you know, a lot of times when I'm working with people, I'm like, think about someone you're vulnerable with, right? Think about someone that you do this with. Very often they can't think of anyone, right? So like very often the people who have a hard time with vulnerability, they're not doing it with their closest friend. They're not doing it with their spouse, they're not doing it with their mother or their sister or their whoever, right? They're just like sort of closed off to the world. And that's something that, again, we're trying to recognize, yeah, who should we be vulnerable to, who not, where is it healthy, where is it not healthy? There are some people who are oversharers. That's also not the right way to be, right? But we're sort of trying to find that delicate balance of like, how can we do this in the right places to have more meaningful relationships?
I was about to ask you, but perhaps this is jumping the gun. You could tell me that you're going to deal with this later, but I was, you know, in the concept of oversharing, I was wondering whether, would you say that maybe if someone who's oversharing on social media and being vulnerable, so to speak, with the public, does it come at the expense of being truly vulnerable in the private sphere? Like, does it affect their intimate relationships negatively? Like, they're almost over-vulnerable elsewhere. Are we getting there later?
Yeah, we can get there. Yeah. I mean, I think that, again, there's no, you know, black and white people, you know, who do that. But I think people have to just be more conscious and checking in and aware of like, where am I? Where am I not? And sort of recognizing where it really needs to be worked on. Right. Because there's no like, yeah.
So since we know it's so important, what holds a person back from being vulnerable? And why are people struggling with it? Like, you know, we say it sounds so clear. Like, yes, you need to be vulnerable in your most intimate relationships, with your spouse, your family, like, right? So why can't we just go ahead and do it? What's holding us back?
Sure. So there could be a lot of reasons for it, right? So and I was thinking about this, right? There could be many things that people, for different people, it might be different things. The number one reason we hold ourselves back is because we don't want to feel any sort of shame, right? Shame is like the deepest, darkest feeling that we can sort of have, right? And we run away from shame in any sort of which way, you know, without realizing it, right? Because to feel that very deep sense of shame, which we all have and carry in some sort of way about a multitude of things. I mean, that's just part of being a human being, right? We don't want to feel that way. We don't want other people to see us in that light, right? So we have parts of ourselves that we're ashamed of, like we all do. We don't want other people to see those parts of ourselves, right? Like I always tell my clients, like we all have like dark pieces, right? That are like, okay, we wouldn't want someone to know this about us, right? That's just part of being a human being, right? And I find this comes up a lot around intimacy. Shame is something that I deal with a lot about around, you know, people who struggling with their intimate lives. I think specifically because we don't know, especially in that area, what's going on in other people's lives, right? And obviously it's a good thing. No one, you know, just shares their most private details, right? But at the end of the day, I find people carry a lot of shame, even specifically around their intimate lives, especially around things that they're just not sure if it's sort of normal or average for people to be experiencing this, right? So I have a lot of women who, let's say, are just struggling with low desire, let's say, right? They're struggling to sort of have this desire to want to be intimate. I find a lot of times that they carry a tremendous amount of shame because they're like, there is something deeply wrong with me that I don't have this desire. And they're really afraid to tell people that, because it's not like they have their friends telling them, hey, I also feel that way, right? I think there's a lot of things in life we don't talk about, but there are, I think intimacy is like the most private thing. Obviously that's the way it should be. But at the end of the day, I think people have less shame about like their kid throw a temper tantrum, right? Because at the end of the day, like we know kids throw temper tantrums. They're not so ashamed of the fact that they have a kid that throws a temper tantrum, right? So they're more easily going to share, oh my gosh, this morning I had it with my kid, right? Kind of a thing, versus something more obviously private, but even to their own spouses, even in their own closest relationships, they're very afraid for someone to see that and say, what's wrong with you, right? Like, why do you have this? So I think that we carry shame in a lot of parts of our lives, right? But I think at the end of the day, when any area that we think we may be abnormal about, or may not be sort of a typical about, we carry even more shame about, and we just want to avoid that shame feeling at all costs.
Okay, so number one that I'm hearing you say is shame. Shame is the biggest, you know,
deterrent.
Term that holds us back. What else would you say?
So also, I think for a lot of people, the reason that they're not vulnerable is also because of a lack of self-awareness, right? The link between self-awareness and vulnerability are very closely tied together, right? Because being vulnerable is about showing our inner emotions, our inner thoughts to other people, right? So when we recognize, right, that, you know, our thoughts and our feelings are very complicated. Not everyone has it on the tip of their fingers. Like someone hurts them and they know they felt disappointed rather than scared, right? Like some people have a harder time knowing their authentic self, knowing why, right, they're actually feeling what they're feeling, or what, you know, what exactly the feeling is called. It's a lot of what I work on with people in therapy, right? But some people have a harder time with it than others. And I find a lot of people will just go around throwing out like, that made me feel bad. Okay. So we know like, it's gonna make you feel bad, but there's so much more nuances to it. And the more we get to know ourselves, the more comfortable we get with those feelings, the more comfortable we might get in sharing those feelings, right? So I think that, like, again, coming back to intimacy for a moment, right? Like, I think also in that area, a lot of people don't know what it is that they want, feel, experience, desire, right? People struggle with like knowing these things. And so sometimes that is like the reason why I find some people have a hard time. It's more about, I don't have so much to hide, but I don't even know what I'm thinking or feeling, right? So it's something that sort of has to be cultivated and worked on in order to help them with that.
It's almost like two extremes. It's like one is shame. I don't want you to feel bad. The other one is self-awareness. I don't even realize that I'm having these feelings to share. Exactly. They're kind of all hit. They're covered up with such thick layers.
Yeah.
All right. Would there be anything else?
Yeah. I think also, you know, another big reason is the uncertainty of people's reactions. So even if you're like not feeling ashamed about something, you're feeling okay with like, yeah, the fact that you're a more anxious person. Right. But like, the uncertainty of, right, the biggest risk in vulnerability is, I don't know how you will react when I share this with you, right? If we predict every reaction that the person will have, it would be much easier, right? Like, I know I can share this and I'll be totally safe and fine. But in general, as human beings, we have a want to control and to be certain about things and to know the outcome of things. And we don't know what the end of the story will be. We don't know, we'll share something that we think is not so terrible, and someone might look at us and be like, ooh, that's what you're going through, that's what you have going on, that's how you feel about this thing, right? And at the end of the day, they're going to make feel judged or not accepted, or someone's gonna, you know, feel like, you know, what is wrong with you, right? And it's uncomfortable to not know the outcome, right? So I'll sometimes find, I'll have clients that will like tell me they want to share something with me, and they'll just hem and haw for like a good 10 to 15 minutes about something that's just so normal or regular or average, right? But they're just so afraid of like watching your, you know, a person's facial expression when they share this thing about themselves. And at the end of the day, it's like, you know, there really is, there's a true fear of like, what will you think of me, right? And not everyone also is, you know, vulnerability goes both ways, right? Not like, if we all express to each other what we thought about what they just shared, people may feel more comfortable. Like, you'll be truthful with me. But most of the time we don't, right? Even if we are judging someone, we're not going to say, oh my gosh, you are so strange, right? Like, we're just gonna be like,
well, that's a good thing, right?
Exactly. People who are even more sensitive sometimes to judgment of others or how other people think, we all think about that. Obviously, we live in a world where that's a good thing. It's a good thing we're aware of how other people think of us. But there are more people who are obviously more sensitive to that than others. And I think just like, you know, keeping that in mind, if you're that kind of person that might hold you back from that, you know, we'll talk about how to work on some of these things, you know.
Okay.
And the last thing, which I think is like pretty big also, right, is like, you know, previous experiences or trauma, right? So part of also why, you know, why I wanted to do this and I thought it was important is because, you know, at the end of the day, are, you know, going back even to childhood, right? But, you know, whether it's previous experiences in your current relationship or past relationships, definitely have a huge effect on how vulnerable you're going to be, right? And I find a lot that people are protecting themselves from past hurt, right? Now, when I say past hurt, obviously there are some people who I'm talking about, if they had, you know, tremendous trauma in their history, obviously neglect or manipulation or abuse or abandonment, you know, very obviously severe things, of course they're going to struggle with being able to, you know, just open up to someone, share, trust, let go. Those are all going to be extremely hard things for them to do. And it's understandable and expected that they're going to be more guarded. But what I find is that aside from those things, which, you know, doesn't happen all the time, unfortunately, it is part of some people's histories, right? Is that I find so many people that I work with don't have what they would refer to as trauma, right? They wouldn't think of their home as being a very, you know, difficult or dysfunctional sort of space. They think of their home as actually being good, healthy, loving, okay. But when we sort of, you know, go into it, it's not about blame because all parents try to do their best, right? When they sort of go into it, they sort of see there were certain things that were missing that made it more difficult to build up this sort of muscle of being comfortable, trusting, opening up. One big factor is just like, what was emotional talk like in your home? You know, how is it for you to express emotions? Did others express emotions, right? And again, in very healthy homes, sometimes this could be something that they just never practiced or got used to. And it leaves sort of a feeling of like, okay, I'm better off not sharing these parts of myself, right? Maybe not so consciously, but at the end of the day, or even homes where there was less physical affection, right? Less sort of outward, which is also vulnerable in some way, right? Sort of trying to express yourself in that way. I find, you know, when the affection wasn't there physically or even verbally, a lot of these people, again, will come out, they're not coming to therapy. They're not saying, you know, like, I had such a difficult childhood. They're saying I actually had a really good childhood. But when they understand what it takes, vulnerability is something that's hard to develop. It's not like more of us than not will come out of, you know, sort of our histories and have a hard time with vulnerability. It's part of the human condition. But I think at the end of the day, the people who have a harder time with it are the ones that could look back and say, okay, there were things that were missing for me that didn't help me build this muscle. And I think in thinking about that, it's not necessarily like you have to have this really deep, dark story, but being able to recognize like, okay, I might've gone through things that just made it less available to me to just sort of open up, trust, let my guard down, right? And I think in general, if we just understand that, you know, it's a self-protective mechanism, right? It's not a bad thing. It's not like we don't have to look at it in a shameful sort of way, but recognizing, no, like, you know, our system sort of learned to protect ourselves, but we sort of need to ask ourselves now in our current relationship, do I still need all these self-protective mechanisms or are they holding me back in life? And that's sort of what I see a lot of self-protection, a lot of guard being up, a lot of walls being up, right? Just in general, in intimacy and the work is sort of to be more aware of the walls that are around you, not to make them just, you know, go away. Like, again, it's not about making yourself vulnerable to everyone around you. It's more about trying to be more conscious of them and sort of see where can we, you know, create a door in this wall a little bit and let the right people in to who we really want to connect with.
You know, yeah. What came up for me when I heard you say, I want to just bring that up again, is sure. A disclaimer, you know, all of our podcasts are for informational purposes only, right? Someone listening to this podcast, this doesn't replace your individual professional health. So when I heard you say, like, you know, previous experiences and trauma, and what's important is that this can apply to you, even if it's not, you know, something that you're aware of as a dark sort of history, I'm going to hope, and if not, I'm going to say it out here, that if someone knows they have a previous experience or trauma where they're identifying this is the trauma that's affecting my need to be vulnerable, then obviously this podcast is not enough. You're going to need to get individual guidance. But what this podcast can be helpful for and sort of informational is kind of planting the seeds for, you know, the majority of people or a large percentage of people who may be struggling with this on a very minor scale, right? We're not identifying some deep trauma or previous experience, but there has been some previous experience or, you know, a lowercase t trauma kind of influencing the vulnerability. Would you agree with that?
Yes. It's really to bring, I mean, podcasts are never going to be, you know, totally, right, be able to, like, resolve someone's, you know, stuff from the past, right? It's really about just bring more awareness and understanding. And if you are someone who's been through something, right, obviously to understand that, you know, therapy is a place that could be very helpful for that. This is really, yes, to address, you know, the sort of everyday sort of levels of it. And if this is not enough, because there is more there, that therapy can be a great useful tool for that, right? This is just sort of a sprinkling of information, right?
Right, right. Yeah. So now in order to understand more about it, so we've talked about vulnerability, why it's so important, what are some obstacles to it, but let's talk about what it's not. So like maybe to just sure. isolate on what it is, okay? So if you can address some of the common myths about vulnerability. When someone hears the word, what they automatically might think
about it, for sure, for sure. So I think that there's a lot of myths around it, right? The most common one is probably that people think that it's a weakness, right? People tend to like,
if you're vulnerable, you're a weak person.
Exactly, right? You know, I had a client who was telling me about reaching out for some sort of help, and she's like, it means I can't push through things. And I'm like, no, it actually means a certain source of strength, right? That you're getting the help you need, and you're reaching out, and you're sharing, as opposed to like, just that idea of just like, push through life, be brave, be strong, right? Yes, that's great in certain ways. But I think that, you know, I always say it's reaching out for help, being vulnerable, it actually shows a sign of strength, right? But we tend to label like emotional talk as like a weakness, right? And it's hard, makes it harder, right? Because if we view it as a weakness, then, you know, you're afraid of being judged for it, right? So there's no way to prove this except for seeing it. And I can tell you every time I've encouraged someone to try to share something that they were like, I don't think they need to know that. I don't think I should tell them that. They all, like I can say almost always, right? Like 99% of the time will come back and tell me like, wow, that was really empowering. That felt like strength, right? That felt like that really helped my relationship, right? Like, I didn't think I should share that. But once I did, I was able to, you know, really feel like it helped with our connection, right? So really only acts of vulnerability will sort of prove to you, right? Like that, you know, taking, and we'll talk about taking them in small ways, but like really the only way to sort of prove to yourself, like, oh, this is a good thing to do, right? So, you know, I want just people listening to just think about that, right? Of like, what does vulnerability feel like to you, right? Like, what is it, what comes up around it for you? What does it feel like for you? And trying to identify like, what are my associations with it, and trying to sort of start to be more aware of that, right? Another thing that people, you know, think about is that, okay, I just can't do vulnerability, right? Like, it's not my thing. I don't talk this way. I don't, right? And I say like, everyone has to find, you know, their own comfort with it. It doesn't have to always be this like very mushy, emotional, right? Like, it doesn't always have to look like that. Everyone has to find.
Well, I think when we say some people just can't be vulnerable, I want to just remind that we're not saying to be vulnerable with the entire world. Let's bring it back to context. But we're talking about vulnerability in our marriages, in our closest relationships.
Exactly.
So in our marriages, is there anybody who can't be vulnerable?
Right. So it's sort of like, right. And I think that vulnerability could look in many ways. And I think I look at it as either vulnerability is going to, you know, something you're going to do, or something that's going to, you know, it's going to do to you, sort of, right? Because like, at the end of the day, if we sort of do it willingly and we choose to do it, or at some point, I would say most relationships are not going to thrive and flourish that well if there's no vulnerability in it. Because a lot of times what replaces vulnerability is basically, you know, usually like anger, frustration, blaming, criticizing, because, you know, if we think about it, right, when we, you know, share our feelings, we're really going back to ourselves, right? So just to give an example, right? Like if you had a really hard day at work, right? Something difficult happened at work, right? Maybe your boss called you in and told you, you know, this, you know, parent complained about you, you're a teacher, right? And you get some sort of negative feedback. People, you know, especially people who have had this sort of history, or, you know, in general, sort of go to a place of shame, they may start to feel like, I'm incompetent, I'm not capable, I'm a mess up, right? And you go home. And, you know, you come home to your regular sort of routine, right? And maybe, you know, you find your husband learning versus like putting up supper, or the kids are outside, they should have been inside doing homework, right? And what happens, right? We sort of have like a choice point there, right? People who have a hard time being vulnerable will probably start to like get frustrated, annoyed, say something sort of like, can't, you know, why do I have to do everything over here? This is so hard, right? Like, and sort of get annoyed or frustrated at their spouse, right? And really what's going on is like, you just went through something at work, right? It would be difficult and more vulnerable to come to a place where it could be something like, and again, everyone has to find their way, they feel comfortable saying this, but I need you to know I had a really rough day at work. Something came up, right? And I could use someone to either listen to me, can we talk later? I might be in a really bad mood. It's not you, right? Something you're really doing wrong. It's just I had a long day, right? In some way, talk about what you're feeling versus what the other person's doing. And it takes a lot of, you know, practice to slow that down. But if you're not going to choose to be vulnerable, you're probably more often going to opt to that side of it, right? Which is like, I'm going to get annoyed, frustrated, upset, blame, criticize, do all those things. So at some point, that's going to, you know, escalate and get more difficult over time. So in some ways, we can't avoid vulnerability, right? Like, it's not like someone can just say, I don't do this, right? That's usually a defense mechanism in some way, if they're really, really not willing to try it in some sort of way. So just, so again, in thinking about it. Yeah, go ahead. Okay. Go ahead.
No, well, I wanted to just go on to, you know, in the next point that you had brought up about, you know, myths and vulnerability. And what I'm hearing in your example, I'm wondering about, you know, the next myth. I'm bringing it up as like a statement.
Sure.
This
sure.
is a myth that you're going to, you know, combat about this trust always has to come before vulnerability. I guess this is the biggest myth that you're going to break for me, because
you're
I'm
right.
Wondering, you know, this example of the person coming home and, you know, telling her family, I had a really hard day at work. There has to be trust that the person is going to respond to you, not like saying, well, still, like, this is your responsibility. Do it.
Right. So I think it's sort of like the chicken versus egg, right? Meaning, like, does trust come first? Does trust come after we're vulnerable, right? And it sort of does go circular, right? But I think especially in newer relationships, right, we don't know, right? So obviously mistrust can be there, right? It's not something that if we really mistrust the person that we've gotten a lot of, you know, if your husband would sort of say back to you, right? Yeah. You know, you had a hard day at work. I had a hard day at work. I,
so like, you would say, you know, that broken trust needs to be repaired before vulnerability.
Exactly.
But in a newer relationship, trust doesn't have to come before.
We sometimes want to try to see, and it's sort of like trying it out the waters, right? A little bit, right? But sometimes we want to try to see. In some ways, we also build trust by being vulnerable, right? Trust is much harder to build when we have no vulnerability in it, right? We don't really know. So in some ways, it's sort of like you want to, you know, be a little bit more open, and that's where we start small. We don't just, you know, be vulnerable, the most vulnerable thing in our life, right? To sort of like sprinkling in, you know, in especially in newer relationships, but in general, right? Like something different to see, like, how does this feel to do this? You know, how do you behave when I'm feeling sort of, you know, more vulnerable, right? How do you react to me? You know, is it something that you can handle, something you totally can't, right? So we're not expecting people to keep going back to the people, but it's sort of like, especially in newer relationships, or if you never, it could be a old relationship, but you never tried this too much with them, right? Then you could sort of try to see, okay, can I test the waters out? Because sharing your story sort of builds up that sort of right to be earned to, like, oh, I could trust you, right? And if we never tried that before, we can't walk away and say, oh, we can't trust you. We don't know, right? So I think it's sort of like looking at it as like, it's not just like, okay, first we're going to wait till trust comes and then be vulnerable. It's like, can we sort of have them happen simultaneously in certain situations and be more conscious of that to try that out?
Okay. Now, the next on your statement is that vulnerability and openness are the same thing. And I gave a little chuckle there because I did bring a couple examples of, like, it's good that we have a filter and, like, you don't want everyone to say everything that they're thinking. So I guess that's where you're going to address how vulnerability does not mean like the, oh yeah, you're an open book.
Exactly,
right?
So I saw a great line about this that said, like, openness is the willingness to tell people your story. Vulnerability is your willingness to let others be a part of it, right? So I think that it's sort of like, there's a big difference between being open and being vulnerable. I've worked with a lot of people who I would say they're more open people, right? They'll tell me their story. They'll come in, they're not hiding. They're not, you know, they may be ashamed of it beneath, right? They're not sharing it. They're sharing it more cognitively, logically, right? They're more so just like a story they're telling, but they're sharing the details with me, right? And vulnerability is not necessarily that, right? Vulnerability is not as much about the amount of disclosure that you're doing, but it's really about the quality of it and the intention behind it. When you're sharing something vulnerable, you're feeling it, right? It's something that's a felt sense inside, because you could actually feel it happening, whether it's some of that little feeling of anxiety that comes along with it, that little feeling of shame, that little feeling of discomfort, which is all okay to have, right? Like, another myth is that we can sort of take the discomfort out of this, right? We can't, right? Like, vulnerability in itself is going to be an uncomfortable thing to do. And that sort of like, we train ourselves to be comfortable with the amount of discomfort that it should come along with, right?
Okay. So it's always going to come with some discomfort. The fact that it's getting less discomfort is because you're using it.
And you're building that trust with that person, right? So again, we're doing this, we're trying to practice this in marriage, and like, you're building that trust of like, okay, maybe the first time you're going to share something and be vulnerable, your spouse is not going to know exactly what to do with it, right? You also, that's part of being vulnerable is also sharing what you need. I need you to just listen to this and not fix this for me. I need you to, you know, share your thoughts about it. I need you to be able to let me into, you know, have you ever felt this way before? Like, we have to work on this, right? It's not something that's just going to come like that. But I think that people a lot of times will tell me I'm vulnerable. And I'll say, look, I definitely think you're in the direction of being vulnerable, right? Because you are someone, you know, again, some people have a hard time even being open, right? They don't share anything with anyone about their lives, right? But there are a lot of people who will have more openness, right? They'll tell you a story about themselves. They'll share something that maybe someone else wouldn't share. But I think it's about really looking at like, okay, what's the quality behind it? Is there any feeling that comes along with that? Is it something that you would just tell anyone or almost anyone? Or is, you know, are there things that you're saving for really sort of, you know, intimate relationships, right? So even asking yourself, like, why am I sharing this? What am I hoping for when I share this, right? What emotions am I experiencing as I share this could be a really great way to start to differentiate between, okay, I'm just like, I'm a type of person who can share, but to like really go to those deeper places with what we're talking about, that, you know, would be much harder for me. And I think, again, there'll always be some discomfort that will come along with that, right? It's not, it's something that we're not looking to take the discomfort out of it, because inherently being vulnerable is uncomfortable. We're looking to make it more manageable with that discomfort, right? And that's where we always have that choice point where it's like, if I, you know, sort of open myself up in this way, it's going to be uncomfortable. But if it feels like a tolerable amount of discomfort, we can work through it. If it feels like intolerable, there might be something more going on for that person that maybe needs to be sorted out, you know, with a professional help or whatever it might be. If they constantly find themselves up that wall, we're not looking for people to like just push through and force themselves through it. We're looking to sort of find that window of tolerance where it's like, okay, it's uncomfortable, but I can handle this, right? And the more you do it, the more you build that trust, the more it will get more natural for you to do in the future.
Right. So it automatically comes up for me questions about how far we go, but I think that that will continue in our conversation as we quantify, you know, where we are talking about encouraging this vulnerability. So now that we understand why it's so hard to be vulnerable, can you share why, like what the benefits are, why someone should, even though we're not powering through, we kind of have to be vulnerable to it, but why should someone make the efforts to go through that discomfort and to break those myths for themselves and build that trust? Or not worry about the trust right now, but be vulnerable anyways. Why should someone do that hard work? What's
so hard? Right? Why is this worth it? Right? Why is this worth it? Right? So, at the end of the day, I mean, like I said, I don't think healthy, connected relationships will happen without vulnerability. Right? So definitely, the more we're open and vulnerable to our spouses, right, the more we will develop a deeper relationship. I very much see.
So then number one, we're saying that you can't really have a healthy connection without it. You need, for the deep connection to happen, you need to have the vulnerability.
Yeah. Whenever I see people who are struggling with physical intimacy, I'm always asking about their emotional connection, about how vulnerable they are with each other, how much they can let the other one in, right? Because I find there's a huge connection between it also, where, you know, when people are sort of looking for like, you know, more tips and tools and ideas of how to improve their physical relationship, I'll say to them, you know, let's talk about if you have the most important thing, which is that emotional intimacy, right? Emotional intimacy comes from vulnerability. Without emotional intimacy, your relationship can only get so far, right? So now, again, some people need more of it, some people need less of it. It depends on people's personalities and who they are. But I think that when we have this more vulnerable and authentic relationship, we have a space to work together on things. Life, like I said, is messy, right? Like, to work through struggles and stuff and honor each other's needs and wants and work through conflict. There's just, everything is set up to be able to work that much better when you can work on this and then build that up over time, right? So really people who are motivated to, you know, be able to be like a team and work together rather than get into who's right, who's wrong, which is where people get stuck often when they're not being vulnerable. It's like, everyone, you know, everyone's right and wrong in some way, right? Like most of the time when couples come to me, I say, you each have valid points. You can tell me the exact same story. You'll probably each have validity to what you're saying, right? For the most of the time, right? Assuming it's, you know, a somewhat healthy relationship, right? But at the end of the day, it's not about the right and the wrong. It's about what are you experiencing? And, you know, less judgment comes when we are let into someone's life more, right? When we're let into what's going on for them. And then we can be that much more understanding and empathetic and compassionate when we're let in that way. So a deeper connection is for sure going to come when people work on this, right? The other thing, like we mentioned before, but I'll just reiterate it, is like, it's just going to help to build up trust, right? When we are truthful and honest with what we're feeling, right? When our spouse said something to us, and maybe they really didn't mean to say it in a bad way, but they sort of saw that like look in your face that's like, right? Like, I didn't really like what you just said, or something hurt me about that. And they say like, what's going on? Like, did I hurt you? Did I say something wrong? And you just say, no, I'm fine, right? Like, it's okay. Don't worry about it. Like, everything's fine. You walk away and just put on a smile, right? When you don't have that authentic relationship and you can't just be like, yeah, I know you didn't mean to. When you said that to me, it really hit like a chord in me and it really hurt, right? And he can say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to. Tell me more about that, right? Like, there's so much more of an authentic relationship. And then again, we're building up the trust that we can be open with each other and we can, you know, work through things together, right? So again, it's uncomfortable. And it definitely is something that we have to practice doing over time. But when we try to hide our feelings and we try to just avoid talking about our feelings, we can sense that, and the relationship can sense that. And honestly, people deep down, most human beings want that connection. They don't want to have an inauthentic connection. And when, again, we do it, that's where the trust starts to build up. And the last thing I would say that really vulnerability does is that it really improves your own relationship with yourself, right? Because I sort of, you know, look at it as like at the end of the day, right? When we work on vulnerability, we're sort of needing to begin being more self-aware. What are we feeling? What's going on for us, right? When we start to really look at our thoughts and our feelings, we notice those sort of shameful places, right? We notice those negative thoughts, which we all have about ourselves, right? And the more we sort of practice working on this, what's needed in order to practice it is compassion, right? And starting to be able to sort of be less judgmental of ourselves. Because in order for us to be more vulnerable and open, we want to, the less judgmental we feel about ourselves, the easier it will be to do that, right? So sort of embracing vulnerability forces us in some way to embrace a certain amount of kindness and compassion and recognizing like the humanness in ourselves, right? So like just telling yourself when you sort of come across something that you're like, I'm not so comfortable with that, right? I'm not so happy about that. I wish this was different about me. Sort of being able to practice that compassion to tell yourself, yeah, I'm human. I'm not alone. Other people feel this way too. Or like, I'm allowed to have parts of myself that, you know, I don't like so much or not perfect in some way, right? Just like I have limitations, like all people have limitations. And just the more that we believe this and the more that we do this as a first starting point, sometimes for some people who really, you know, don't feel so great about themselves. And again, like everything else, like I said earlier, it's not people who like, you know, really have to work on their self-esteem and in, let's say, a therapeutic sort of setting with people, just everyday life where, you know, we all judge ourselves just as much as we think other people are judging us, right? Sort of to be able to try to see if we, you know, if we can work on that first ourselves, we might be less dependent on what other people think so much about us. So that makes vulnerability a drop easier, right? Because it's like, okay, the more you feel so terrible at yourself, the more that comes through and the more you're sort of like, okay, this is part of me. I don't love this part of me, but like, I can accept this part of me because I'm a human being. Right.
What I'm hearing you say is, you know, we need self-awareness in order to be vulnerable, but right. Then we also need to be aware that when we go examine ourselves with self-awareness, it should be with compassion rather than with that judgmental eye. Like, oh, I'm really self-aware. I'm very aware of all my faults. I can even list them for you. But it's more like approaching all those self-awareness with compassion, then it can encourage you to have the trust that you can be vulnerable with someone because we're trusting that they're going to also be compassionate on these faults.
Sure, for sure. Okay. And the last thing just to mention quickly, I think we sort of touched upon this, is like it also will reduce conflict, right? I do find that people, you know, if they were able to, again, sort of be more honest and open about their experience versus the blame or the criticism, that's most of the time what we do, right? When we're struggling with vulnerability, most people will find they tend to be more, you know, blaming of others because it's sort of, it's hard to sit again with their own feelings because they feel so uncomfortable with their own feelings. So all of that is like sort of connected to each other. The more we work on that, we feel better about ourselves, the less conflict we have, the more deeper connections we have. It all just sort of goes hand in hand with each other.
It's almost like when you're vulnerable, you're going to not trigger your own self-defense mechanisms or trigger the other person's self-defense mechanisms because they're not going to sort of attack you when you just you had a hard day.
I also find vulnerability breeds vulnerability, right? So meaning the more you do it, even if you're like, hey, you know, I'm always the one to do this. My spouse is not the one to do it. I find just like any other modeling, when we show up as our authentic selves more and more in relationships, automatically it shifts something in the relationship that, you know, I'm not saying automatically they're going to learn how to do it, but the other person, again, because human beings want to connect and want to be, you know, able to show that, like, we all want to show ourselves to someone and be accepted, right? So it allows for the other person to sort of be like, right? Like that, you know, that feels good to get it from you. Maybe I could try that, right? It's not so conscious always, but I do find that, you know, when one person can do it, you know, the other person wants to try to do it as well very often.
So for anyone who's listening here and feels like, well, I can't do this unless I have my spouse listen to this as right. well, it could just start with yourself.
Yeah. You can
begin to make those changes.
Relationship. Yeah,
it, for sure. You know, it's like a puzzle or a domino effect. It's going to, if you're going to make a change in something, it's going to have a ripple effect somewhere.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so now that we talked about what it is and what it isn't and why it's important, can you give our listeners some practical ways that they can work on this in their marriages to build emotional connection? So we're talking about vulnerability. Let's bring it back to our main point, is a vulnerability within our own marriages. What are some practical ways that someone can do right. this if they're finding that they're not doing it as much right. as they think?
Sure, sure. So I think it's really start thinking about it as starting small. It might feel overwhelming for someone who's like, great. Now, yeah, I want to be vulnerable, right? But like, what in the world do I do with this now, right? Like, how do I put this into practice? How do I make this practical, right? So really starting to think about it in a very, very small way. Nothing is built up overnight. It's something that you have to just really think about, just a small, digestible pieces that you can chew, right? You try to take too much, you end up just, you know, not being able to swallow it, right? So like something very small would be like, think about anyone. It could start with, if it's not your spouse that you feel automatically, you know, the first person you could go to, that's okay. Right. But think about as we're working towards that, because that's where we're trying to focusing in on. But like, think about anyone that you can try to do this with in small ways, right? A sibling, a close friend, a parent, or anyone, a mentor, a mashpia, anyone, right? That you're sort of able to say, like, okay, can I just try this out? And you can even tell them you're trying it out, right? Almost as like, and just being honest about that, right? And just saying, let me just try to see if I can test the waters a little bit and just see how this feels, right? And starting with something really small. Like sometimes some people not, but that doing something positive and it feels a little easier than the negative ones. Like even giving a compliment to someone can be vulnerable, right? Even though logically we would say like, what's going to happen from giving a compliment, right? But it puts us in that space where it's like, we're putting us a little bit in the light of like, how's that person going to react? Are they going to accept it? Are they going to reject it? Are they going to like I said that, right? So even that has a vulnerability attached to it. You could just practice it even with a stranger, right? You could just be able to sort of just bring it into your life if it's something that's really hard for you to do, and work towards a place where you bring it into your marriage, right? Just in really, really small ways and really, really, you know, just like, you know, just again, very digestible ways to start with, right? You want to like also think about, again, if you're going to start with it where you feel like, okay, I'm a little more comfortable with this, I can start with my spouse. Just thinking about like the timing that you're doing it, right? Like you want to set up the best opportunity for it to go well. It's not like we're just saying be vulnerable, open, share at any point in time, anything and everything, and like just see how it goes, right? We're trying to be smart about it. We're trying to say like, think about the timing. Think about, you know, what is your spouse doing? You maybe want to ask him, right, or her, right? Like, hey, you know, I heard this podcast. I'm interested in trying this out. You know, what do you think? Is this a good time for you to talk a little bit? Is it a time for me to try to, you know, try to work on this? Like, we don't have to make it like hidden. We could just be more, you know, vulnerable and honest about the fact that you're trying to be vulnerable, right? And like sort of trying to just, again, small ways, being, you know, like authentic about the fact that this is hard for you, right? And it could feel uncomfortable, but just remembering that like, it's just something we're just going to try out. It could be as something as simple as a statement of, I feel blank about blank and I need blank, right? So I'll just give an example, right? Like, I feel disappointed about when you come home later than you told me you would come home. And I just need you to call me to let me know next time or text me, right? So I feel blank about blank and I need you to blank, right? Just sort of like something for some people, it helps to have very concrete, simple sentences, right, to start with.
So what I'm hearing is you're saying start small. And I know in a lot of conversations, for sure, in previous podcasts, we've talked about, you know, giving an I message in order to be able to give over the feeling. It's not attacking the other person. So would you say that that's also part of being vulnerable when you're saying, like, I felt this because this, like you're telling your side of the, not your side of the story, you're telling your story is part of vulnerability? Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Yes, 100%. Meaning you're telling, right, what you experienced. Versus a lot of times we're telling the other person what they did wrong, right? You came home so late. You didn't text me. You didn't call me. How could you have not, right? That's so different than saying, I felt worried, right? That you weren't showing up, right? right? The person can, you know, whenever I work with couples on this, I say, like, you ask the other person, how does that land on you? It lands on them so much better, right? When it's like, oh, you felt worried. I didn't do anything so terribly wrong that I didn't call you. But like, yeah, okay, I should have called you next time, right? But like, at the bottom line is you felt really scared. You weren't sure where I was, or you felt really disappointed because I was supposed to come home in time for this and I didn't come home in time for bedtime, right? Like, we can hear that so much more easily, right? And this goes back to, we're always, beneath any sort of frustration, anger, we're always having another feeling that is, like, you know, researched, right? So sometimes people have, like, you know, there's like, a, you know, if you Google online, like, emotional wheels or emotional, you know, talk, there's always something beneath the anger. And we can express that feeling as an I statement. Again, that is vulnerable. And that is much harder to say than to just, like, say to the person, how could you have, you know, blank, 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 great, because sort of done whatever they did, you know?
Like you had said, the prerequisite for that is self-awareness, to realize that beneath your anger, beneath your frustration, beneath the fact that you're like so worked up about this, there's that underlying, you know, fear, abandonment, whatever it is that's coming up for you. But being able to be vulnerable and sharing that with the person is really what's going to help help you actually, like you said before, the vulnerability is going to resolve the conflict or make it land better on the other person instead of just triggering a cycle of defense and arguments.
Yeah, yes. Okay. Usually when people are constantly fighting, I find that they have to look at, like, how vulnerable are we being with each other? Right now, again, it becomes complicated. I understand that people have been fighting for years and they've gotten so much negative responses. It's not so easy to undo. And that's where sometimes professional help is needed, right? It may not be enough to listen to this, but at least that awareness of, oh, maybe that's our thing, right? Maybe we're getting stuck there, right? That could help them to know that.
But do you have any other tips for the emotional connection, or should we move on to how this specifically?
Yeah, just the only other thing I would say, you know, is sort of like, you know, discuss, first of all, people can discuss vulnerability in itself. Like I said, I think bringing it up as like, okay, I want, like, just again, sometimes it's just a springboard for it. It's like, I heard this talk, I heard this workshop, right? Just sort of be able to talk about how it feels for them to be vulnerable, maybe sharing their fears around it, like going back to, okay, where is the place that you're getting stuck with it, and sharing that could be vulnerable in itself. And I think also, you know, I'll give a lot of, you know, times I'll work with couples, I'll give them sort of the assignment of like, just trying in general to increase emotional talk. Again, a lot of people think of that as like weak or silly or not necessary, right? But I think just being able to, in general, some people it helps to have it being done in a more concrete sort of formal way. So if I tell them, hey, just spend 20 minutes every night talking about your feelings, some people can't do that. They don't know how to do that. They're not practiced at doing that. So there are some really great tools out there, like, you know, there's a game, Perfect Matches, which was like created for like, you know, shidduch dates. And like, they sort of have just like different open-ended conversations. It leads to more emotional talk, right? Or there's a book called 8 Dates. It's written by John Gottman, who's a, you know, a marriage therapist, like a big marriage therapist. That also like a springboard. Some people want resources. I'm happy for them to reach out to me. Like, just to have like a resource of like something to have as a bridge the gap, right? Some people just have a really hard time. That's either because they don't know it, or they haven't practiced doing it. That they just need something to be able to say, like, okay, we have this like formal set time to try to do this, and automatically it'll breed more emotional connection that they're doing that.
Right. Now, circling back to your original bio, when I mentioned that you are a therapist who works with families, you know, with their intimacy, with their marriage, and you said that people come to you with help in the bedroom and you bring it back to the emotional. So now that we've talked about vulnerability, we've talked about what it is and what it isn't, and some tips to help bring that emotional intimacy back to your marriage by being vulnerable, how can this be worked on to improve your physical intimacy?
Sure. So I think that, you know, this is the part that obviously, again, like, I'm dealing with the most, you know, definitely. I think physical intimacy is, you know, the most vulnerable thing that we sort of do in life, right? Like, obviously just by the physical nature of it, but just we feel exposed, right? We feel exposed physically, emotionally, we feel exposed by it. So I think it really brings up like people's biggest insecurities, shames, fears, worries. It's something that, you know, sort of goes right to the heart of it. So that's where I think it really often shows up as more obvious for some people. So I think the biggest tool anyone could have is communication about intimacy, right? I find some couples, a lot of couples, have a very hard time doing this, even if they're married for a really long time. Right? Like they're being intimate, but they're not necessarily talking about it in any sort of which way. And couples that have healthy, strong relationships talk about intimacy over and over and over and over again. It's not something that's like a one-time conversation, like we're good to go. It's something that's talked about all the time, because it's something that, especially with the ups and downs of life and changes and, you know, physically, emotionally, so many different things, it's something that constantly has to be shifted and talked about and renegotiated and worked through. And, you know, I, you know, the way I describe it to people is like, there should always be talk about it in general, but like before, during, and after is sort of how I, you know, map it out for them. As, you know, again, I'm not saying every single time, it's not black and white and it's not right, but sort of like overall, there should be a lot of more communication, whether it's beforehand, someone's going to the mikvah and they're nervous and they're anxious, right? I tell them, just talk about it, right? Just sort of open up and tell your spouse, you know, I know you're really excited about tonight, but I'm feeling nervous about it, right? And like that in itself breeds so much connection, right? And again, I'll say this over and over again. I hardly ever had anyone that said to me, like, why did she share that? I know, like, I hear this over and over again. I'm so happy you told me, right? I'm so happy you shared this with me, right? Allow someone into your reality, right? So the beforehand, what you're feeling, what you're experiencing, what you're up for, what you're not up for, what you're okay with, what you're not okay with, right? During, like, the feedback during intimacy is so important, right? Nobody wants to just have, like, complete silence. They have no idea what's going on for the other person, right? This, I would want more of this. I want more, less of that. This is good for me. That's not good for me, right? Can you try to change this, right? Like, just that feedback is something that, again, breeds so much more connection and authenticity, right, to the, like, experience and to the connection. And after doesn't mean directly after, doesn't have to be that, right? But like at some point, again, some sort of, you know, healthy intimate couples will have some sort of check-in at times. Again, not every time, but like, you know, how was that for you? Is something that you would want to try differently? Is something that worked for you, didn't work for you, right? Like there constantly is this conversation, because again, things really do change. I think especially I work a lot with women, right? Like for women, you know, hormones and life and, you know, physical changes, just, it's something that doesn't just like stay the same throughout your lifetime. We could just assume that this worked for you now, will work for you the rest of your life, right? So that communication for sure is hard and vulnerable and difficult to say, I need more of this. I don't like that. I do like that. This works for me. This doesn't work for me, but it can breed so much more connection, so much more, even though it is a vulnerable space to be. So asking for what you need, right, is just like a huge thing. I find a lot of people struggle with that. I think it, when it comes to intimacy, asking for the positive is actually easier than asking for the negative, right? Saying, I want more of that. I appreciate that, right? Is often much harder and more, feels much more vulnerable to do than like, I don't like that. Don't do that again, right? Kind of thing, right? So like just that positive.
You're saying it's more vulnerable to ask for the positive. I was going to say, shouldn't that always be what we ask for? More of this, not of that. But I hear it. You're saying in this, it might feel
in
more
this vulnerable. Context specifically, I think around intimacy, I think it's something that people have a really hard time. They feel like a certain amount of shame, I think especially women, right? To be able to say, I enjoyed that, right? Like that would be something that I would enjoy each time, or I want you to do that again, right? Like that's something I enjoy doing that with you. That's something I find people feel a lot of shame around, because they feel like there's something wrong with me, that, right? Like no one knows, right? So it's sort of like, I find that people have a really hard time doing that. And I find a lot of the husbands want to know that, right? They want their wives to be happy and to feel good. And right, so like just sharing that is so important, but again, definitely will be a vulnerable space to do, right? And I think the other, you know, last point I would make is like sort of around like physical affection, also asking for that. You know, I really want to hug, you know, at the end of the night before we go to sleep, right? Like being able to say, you know, reaching out for someone to initiation is very vulnerable when it comes to this, both in intimacy or just physical affection, right? We're not sure. We're going to reach out for the hug. Are they going to embrace us back? Are they going to say, not up for this right now, right? So initiating is like a really vulnerable space to be. And I think just acknowledging that helps a lot, to say, it is hard for me when I, you know, initiate and like you sort of bristle back, right? Would you be able to let me know, okay, I'm just doing the dishes now and I'm just not up for it right now, right? While that's still hard to hear, it's less of a rejection, right? So being able to have, like, again, that communication along with just, you know, reaching out even non-verbally can be extremely vulnerable too, but at the same time can breed a lot of that connection, right? So just working on that to be able to, you know, have the communication with it along with trying to, you know, navigate what works, what doesn't work, I find, you know, again, it's vulnerable, but really breeds so much more connection for a couple. And I find the antidote to a lot of people's problems around intimacy is really building up that emotional connection to feel like we're not on different pages. Like we know where you're each at, right? I've found time and time again, when someone sits and shares, like I'm struggling with this, it's not that it doesn't go wrong, right? It's something that people appreciate, that I appreciate you telling me where you're at, right? It's the worst feeling is to feel like we are in two different pages, two different planets. you're here, I'm there, and we're just having completely different experiences. So when we can let someone into our experience, even though it's scary and vulnerable, it will allow them to be able to work with us and be able to have that more, you know, genuine relationship.
What I'm hearing from you as well as you go through some of these examples is that when you're working on vulnerability in your marriage, we also have to be kind of self-aware with not only are we practicing vulnerability with our spouse, but it's also practicing and allowing that person to be vulnerable with us and not rejecting their vulnerable overtures with an automatic bristle or, you know, it's almost like, okay, let's be aware. Let's work on our vulnerability. And let's also allow our spouse to be vulnerable with us and think about how we're reacting to what when they are vulnerable. Are we encouraging more of it or are we
stopping discouraging it? Right. Yeah, I think the more we also become aware of how difficult it is, right, then we actually start to have more compassion toward our spouses when they're doing it. And it's like, no, asking me for that was really hard, right? It wasn't just like so simple for you to bring that up or for you to ask me for that, right? And just recognizing like, it takes a lot of courage and strength to do that. And just at least acknowledging that doesn't mean we have to do what they're asking us to do, but at least acknowledging the strength and the vulnerability that comes along with that. And yes, allowing more space for that as well.
Right. Okay. I found this conversation really informative, and I hope that everyone who's listening to it also can just have these little nuggets of wisdom, these like small points that can, like you said, we're starting small in our vulnerability or accepting our spouse's vulnerability, making small positive changes in our marriage and in our closest relationships. Is there anything else you'd want to say in concluding this conversation, Pamela?
No, I think just, you know, again, like that awareness, I think I would love people to just, to, you know, utilize this as a tool to just think about, okay, where am I at in this, right? Not as a place of like feeling badly about it, right? But just like, where am I at with this, becoming more aware, and just, you know, everyone has that opportunity and chance to work on it, right? And just, you know, in every relationship, obviously, if there's something more going on, yes, okay, that will be addressed, right? But just, you know, in just sort of a general relationship, to sort of like, how can I just start to test the waters and try this out? And just start to be just, you know, more conscious of like, where am I at in the spectrum? And it's okay to have it, you know, be worked on slowly, right? No one has to feel like they have to become vulnerable in one day, right? But just sort of to like, just keep it more in mind and more in their thoughts.
Okay. Well, thank you for all these tips. We hope all of you out there can listen and benefit. You know, vulnerable in our relationships means close relationships. When we're close with each other, that brings the Shekhinah into our home. That is our ultimate goal and kind of why marriage is so, you know, are the most sacred relationship in Yiddishkeit, in Judaism. And so we want to kind of bring that back, that this whole conversation really is to encourage that, to encourage your emotional closeness, which brings to your intimacy being really with Hashem in your marriage. So I give everyone a bracha to be able to find that for themselves, work on that for themselves, and to reach out for guidance if they're finding that they're struggling with it. Okay, and thank you everyone for listening and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the first episode in the series. Stay tuned for next week as we continue hearing about the topic of Shalom Bias.
We hope you enjoyed today's recording. Please take a moment to leave a rating or a review to help others find the podcast. We welcome you to support our vital work at mikvah.org/donate. For feedback, please email podcast@mikvah.org. Have a wonderful day.